Welcome back to another episode of Life with the Dog. My name's Panos, joined by my co-host, Luke Badman. How are you, brother?
Good morning. Good morning. How are we?
I feel very awake for a morning podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike last session, I was a little bit rusty, or last podcast, I mean. Mm. So, good to be back. How have you been?
I'm well. The weather's cooling down.
How sucks does it mean this morning? It was chilly. Yeah,
well, tomorrow, I guess, is the autumn equinox, right? The 22nd.
True.
Mm-hmm.
True.
So,
through the cycles we go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You kind of, like, look, if we had a perpetual summer for all year round, then we would live in somewhere like Dubai, which would be desert. So, as much as you love summer, you have to honor the cycles.
Oh, and by the end of summer, I'm over it. I'm over the humidity.
You're done?
I quite like autumn. I quite like spring. By the end of winter, I'll be like, I'm over the cold. So, it's good to have the balance.
Yeah, that's true. I think the dogs would be much happier when it's cooler since, you know, 40 degree days are a bit rough. And, yeah. You know, storing the dog in the car when between sessions is always a mission, trying to find shade, aircon, you know, just looking after him. So when it's cooler, it's certainly much better.
Mm.
So there's pros and cons to it all. And the cold showers are starting to get proper cold too. So that's a good thing because a lukewarm shower is a bit of a buzzkill.
Yeah. But it's, you can use the warmer weather to, if you're trying to transition into cold showers, you can
use that
warm weather. And then by the time you get to winter, you'd probably be pretty good, I reckon.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, today's episode is, and I'm not sure, as I was just speaking to Luke before, not sure if we've discussed this and I didn't really even check.
We might have, but
we may have discussed it, but I don't think it's been a topic episode.
Mm-hmm.
So today's talking about every day should be treated like the trial day. So let's give some context. Like, what the hell do we mean? People that do sport training or train their dog for a particular outcome in amongst different groups of training, whether it's agility training, fly ball, whether it's, you know, bite protection sports or scent detection. The training that is done is always working towards trial day so you can get points, so you can potentially win or beat your personal best on trial day. So every session's kind of set up towards a broken down segment of what you would do on trial day. And that's really good for sport dogs and people that are going down that route. But how about everyday dog owners? How do we train our mindset to think for excellence? And what are we working towards? So if you can think of it this way, on trial day, your dog needs to do perfect healing. If he stares at you and you walk the 15 meters and you do the different angles and your dog stares at you and prances in a certain way, then you may get 5 points, you may get 3 points, depending if the dog performed the skill or not. Your recall and your place, like all these different skills have to be sharp and looking really good as well as being competent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a pet dog owner and you leave the house and you're thinking, oh, one day my dog will be trained. It first of all, it puts, like, the goal isn't strong enough for you to work towards, number one. But number two is I want you to think that, well, I'm training every single session so that if my dog gets off the leash and runs towards a dog, I say come, he comes to me as if today is the trial day and that he has to perform at his best.
Mm.
Because if he doesn't, he may get into a dog fight or get hit by a car. So it's, and another way that I like to see it is if somebody's doing martial arts, for example, and they're training towards the competition day, then they're working towards competition day. But the self-defense martial art person is working for self-defense, which is functional stuff in everyday living so that he can hopefully, in a dodgy situation, get himself out of it, protect himself or protect others that
get away safely.
So it can't be like, damn, I haven't stretched. I'll wait for the next competition to do this fight. It's like, nah, dude, it's happening right now. There's no warm-ups.
Yeah.
You don't put your gi on. You're not doing all this, the rituals.
Yeah.
You have to perform right now, especially when it's unexpected. So there's pros and cons to both. If it's trial day, you got nerves and the anticipation, the anxiety of the thing that's occurring, rather than being ready every time you leave the house. Is your management protocols up to scratch? You know, Chad Macken, dog trainer from the States, put up something on the Facebook the other day where he said, as soon as a leash has an over tie knot, it loses its, I think he said, dexterity by 50%, because it's something to do with how the fibers cross over themselves.
You mean when someone ties a knot in a leash?
Exactly. And yeah. But he said overhand knot, so I'm not sure if there's an underhand knot, but I'm sure like a knot that goes over the top.
Yeah, but I mean, whenever I see leashes with knots in them, I'm like,
why?
How did that happen? And why?
So it happens like all the time, especially in a long lead, it's going to always find its way in a tangle.
No,
right?
I'm talking about like you see people out just, 6 foot leash and they've got knots in them. Like,
some people put knots specifically so they know where to put their hand so it doesn't slide their hand past, like all these random excuses that I hear. That's
hand,
what we like
your
to-
hand goes in the handle.
Hand goes in the handle, and you should thumb lock or leash lock that leash. So if you're going to hold it halfway down the lead, you fold it over.
Yeah.
So the knots in a leash, especially on a long lead, if there's a knot in the lead and your dog's running 10 meters full speed towards a direction, and if there's a knot in it, then you've lost it by 50%. Now, I'm not good at maths, but I don't know if there's a couple of knots in it, then does that percentage go up probably?
Mm.
So that's just like a little detail. Now, I've got a leash that I still currently use with my clients. It's a brass buckled nylon long lead, 10 meters long. And that thing is 12 years old. You look after your stuff, they last a long time. Now, I'm always reviewing and checking my gear, obviously, to make sure that nothing falls and breaks. Mm-hmm. I hate when there's... I never knew about the dexterity being lost in the fibers when there's a knot in it. I also start to say, maybe this is the same thing, is that they start to fray and then they start to split as soon as there's a knot in it. That's where there's a weak spot in the leash. So something as simple as that means that you don't want to have... Now, on trial day, there is no gear on a dog where, like, you know, you leave the house with your dog, then you are allowed to use whatever you like. So part of your preparation of leaving for that day is to make sure that your gear is up to scratch, to make sure that, are you going to use the gear on your dog? Mm-hmm. Some people have the long lead in their hand and they don't attach it to the dog in the park and the dog runs away. So so use your leash, obviously, but also check your stuff and make sure that you're prepared for anything to occur when you leave that house. Is the lead going to slip out your hand? Is my 12-year-old very good-looking leash, is that going to fail at any time? Now, it probably won't because it's stood the test of time currently and it's doing all right. But what is your backup plan? How do you have a good recall or a good downstay? And how much have you proofed it? And if you haven't proofed it, in what situation have you put your dog in so that you can succeed within that potential if something was to go wrong? Are you training towards things going wrong? And like, for example, when it comes
plan,
to like-
What is it? What do we say? Plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Exactly.
In most things, right?
As much as you can.
Mm.
Another thing which could go like, you know, using the analogy of like self-defense training is, there was times when I used to train at the dojo that we wouldn't put on our gi.
Yeah.
And there was two reasons why Sensei said that. Is like, if you put the gi on, now you're in the mindset as if you're fighting and training now.
Right.
And there's something happens when, if you've trained for a while and you put your gi on, you're conditioned to be like, this is what we're doing. Also, it's comfortable to wear a gi. You can like split your legs, move around. You got a lot more movability. Put jeans on and a tight jacket. Then
different sense.
Yeah. Now you can't do the same kick. You can't move the same. So sometimes we'll train within our normal clothes, just the clothes that we're wearing. And it was kind of like a surprise sort of thing. So it was like, we didn't come with our most comfortable clothes so that you can go, how are we going to be able to deal with the situation here? Or we would sometimes train outside on the concrete. So sometimes you'd fall over, like get pushed over,
and it hurts.
Thrown to the ground, and you have to learn how to roll out of it when you're hitting the concrete. Because if you're practicing, and now where we trained, there was no mats. It was in a school, so it was just hard floors with like the dodgiest carpet. So getting slammed to the floor.
There were floorboards in the school hall.
That's it. So it always hurt falling down unless you knew how to roll out of it or if you knew how to fall.
Yeah.
But the best way to learn how to fall is by falling over, hurting yourself, and lowing, damn, I didn't roll. And I'll tell you the other day, actually, in terms of how training does kick into real life situation. We were at a group class a couple of weeks ago and puppies were on the long lead running around having a mad time. And this one puppy run past me again and then just started spinning around my feet. And the lead was around my feet now, his long lead. And he'd done almost his third little circle, his little tiny cute dashie.
Yeah.
So if I stepped on the dashie, I'm squashing that puppy.
Yeah.
So as the lead was going around my legs, I jumped up and then took a step, but then it kind of like continued to go around my ankle. So I threw myself to the ground, did a roll, and I just jumped back up. And then I just grabbed the leash like it was just a normal motion. And my client is so, she's like, what was that? And I'm like, what? And then she's like, that roll. I'm like, oh yeah. Well, now that wasn't me just trying to look cool. It did look cool, but I wasn't trying to look cool. It was just, I have to get to the ground, but if I fall on the ground, I may like hurt a puppy. So I'm going to fall on the ground, roll, and then stand back up again, just as if that's a normal movement. But that had been drilled probably like 2,000 times.
So it became like muscle memory.
Total muscle memory. Yeah. It was one of those closed loop situations. Open loop, closed loop. Remember the conversation with the boys?
Don't confuse me. don't give me a memory test.
I'm pretty sure it was a open loop because it was something that I didn't have to think about. It was a muscle memory. It was just a reaction. So if you practice something enough, it becomes something that you can do in real life, not just in the time where you're practicing and training it. So when it comes to our training, when you leave the house, your mindset should be a little bit more sharp. Another thing as well, which I've mentioned before on the podcast, and some people have had, I wouldn't say an issue with it, but some people kind
feedback.
Of call, they just call me out being like, man, you're a little bit extreme. But like when I've said, every time I leave the house, put shoes on, you don't know who you're going to, you know, get in trouble with. You don't know who you have to chase, what sort of dog you have to push away. Do you have to chase your dog? You're chasing your dog in thongs, slides, jandals, however you want to call them for our American listeners. Yeah. Not running around your G-string, running around jandals, your thongs.
That were you put Kiwis. On your thing, right? What Americans call them? Flip-flops.
Flip-flops, probably.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So yeah, you want to make sure.
Oh yeah, that if we say thong, they think
we're. Where's Panos running down the street in his thong?
There's a mental image.
So and it has to be leopard.
Yeah, things. Yeah, of course,
of course. So if we can share that mindset, and another thing is, you know, part of your mindset when you're training with your dog is don't go to the same park every day and do the same training. Like, come on, guys, let's switch it up as much as we can. Just like we were mentioning in the podcast, talking about mindset for like high drive working dogs. If we do the similar thing too often, the dogs start to anticipate. They'll do it really good in those situations. They may not do it in the other times where you need it. So remember another thing that I used to say all the time. I'm pretty sure I still say it on the potty, but practice when you don't need it. So when you need it, you have it.
Yeah.
And
that's what all training is, isn't it? So you develop that muscle memory in a situation where the stakes are low so that you have the muscle memory when the stakes are higher.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%. And then also setting our dogs up for success in the background. So things that we do at home, and we got a top five of what all dogs should know.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we will just mention it here so we can use that for the example. So me and Luke have agreed, and we agreed just before we did the podcast, so we could do further investigation and change our top five. But at this stage, we have recall, down, bed. So those are the three top commands. You want your dog to be able to come when you call him, down when you say down until you release him, and then go to a place when you tell him to go to their bed. Another one is the crate. So it would be awesome if all dogs knew how to spend a duration in, like, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 hours within their crate.
Yeah.
Because you're not because you need it every night when you go to sleep, but you never know when you need that crate. And dog breaks its leg, you want to go down the coast, tradies come over, friends come over, you're in a situation where you're looking after a friend's dog for a day or two.
Yeah.
And you may need to like crate and rotate.
Even just know. Yeah. I mean, even just now, I'll give you a good example. Like Mia's crawling a lot now. She's probably getting close to walking in the next a few months. And so it's just safer for Shadow if he's in the crate when she's sort of crawling around being a bit crazy in the living room. It's just safer for everyone. So I just put him in the crate, give him his Kong, maybe a bit of peanut butter, whatever. I just have him chill out.
100%.
And she can do her thing and he's out of her way and she's out of his way.
Well, and if you haven't practiced that before, then how difficult is it to try to train it while you have a baby walking around, you're tired, you're busy,
oh my God.
You're at work.
Yeah.
It'd be crazy. So, and then the other one here, which I guess ties into most of these, which we talked about, is conditioned relaxation. Teaching a dog how to do nothing or how to relax on cue. So crate is conditioned relaxation. Bed depending on how you train it, is conditioned relaxation. But there's other ways of doing that. Like, for example, walk out into your front yard, sit down on the floor, give your dog some nice long sort of strokes on the back, and then make that become the cue to just relax, lay down on your side and get your relaxed pat, rather than a pat become this highly stimulating, highly arousing activity where you're playing with your dog. You want to be able to teach your dog how to do nothing, as you mentioned before the potty.
Yeah.
And we do that in our group, in our puppy classes. The first thing that I teach them while I'm like introducing the class and what to do and whatever is I tell all the puppy owners, stand on the leash, puppy break. And that was a tip that I got from Fiona. And where you step on the leash, make sure that your puppy, even though he's buzzing around, jumping up and down, spinning around your feet, eventually they learn to just go, bah. Where sometimes if we don't do something and have a physical cue of stepping on that leash and telling them, hey, there's dead weight on this leash, there's no moving. Where if you're holding it, puppy hits into the leash, it gets a bit of movement towards the direction it's pulling. Or, you know, you react as it reacts and then you got enough leash on it for it to like do all this other crazy behavior. So can we just teach our puppy just to do nothing? Just be calm, just do nothing in this
moment. It's actually one of the hardest things to teach, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so. Especially for a puppy and in a puppy class.
And I think for the human as well, because it doesn't look like much. I think we're so conditioned in the age that we live in. It's like, oh, dog training is the dog is doing something, right? So when it's doing nothing, well, he's still doing something, right? Because he's concentrating on being still or on relaxing. But to the naked eye, the untrained eye, it's like, oh, the dog's just lying there.
Well, it's like meditation is like a life skill that I think everybody could benefit from. Mm. And you'd think meditation is the thing that you do under the waterfall on the most perfect day, because it's like, oh, this would be like a mad Instagram photo to show everyone I meditate, you know, or I want to get the spiritual energy of the waterfall. And it's like, yeah, but that's still quite egotistic, I would say. And you're still trying to feel something that's against what you're trying to do. Meditation can be on a rock. It could be in a prison cell. It can be on your bed. It could be while you're walking. It's a state of mind. It's a practice that you do. And you may want to do it in a nice setting to begin with so you can learn the skill. But I remember we did that episode way back in the day with you and your mum. And it was something, and I was discussing about how meditation didn't just help me with, you know, clearing my mind and clearing the water of the, you know, like if you could visualize your mind being a pond.
Yeah.
You know, every droplet and ripples that happen and all the different turbulence that's happening in the water. Meditation is about stilling it so you can like reorder your thoughts and to have a bit more perspective. But it also helps in a physical application, just like when I walked into that yard with that Neapolitan Mastiff and I was so young. And he'd run up to me and like barking and lunging at me in the face. But he didn't bite me. If I moved or tried to touch him, he probably would have. But I found that moment where I was able to just switch off and just be fully still, focus on my breath. I was sweating and adrenalized. And if I could see it in that moment, I was not in fight because I had the urge to like push him away from me, but I knew that would be dodgy. I had the urge to flight, but I felt like he would probably nail me for running. So I did go into freeze. But while I was in freeze, I wasn't frozen, stuck.
Yeah.
I was still mindful of myself in that moment.
Yeah.
So utilizing that conditioned relaxation and then putting it into an active situation where it could benefit me because I can think clearly and act and move and make a rational decision, not out of panic, but out of control. That was like one of the benefits. And how does that benefit your dog? Well, you can tell your dog to sit while you speak to the neighbor for 15 minutes, but now your dog's in a sit. So he's still in a behavior, not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But can he relax without you having to say sit? Can you just stop and the dog just waits for you to speak to another human while you continue walking? So if trial day is in this context, like, you know, quotations, you walk out the house, you're speaking to the neighbor who's having a bad time, this asking for help, husband just passed away, needs help with this thing, but you can't have this important conversation in a time of need because your dog's being a pain in the ass. Then I would say that we kind of failed in that moment. It would be nice if we've practiced towards that particular situation so our dog can just ace it. So if you don't have a trial day, if you don't have a specific goal to attain or an objective to complete, then what does your training sessions look like? Are you just frivolously doing stuff? And this is something that we've beaten this dead horse on this podcast over and over again, but I think it's worth mentioning. As you said before, some people just do things for the sake of doing it rather than having an actual place and a destination to achieve. Or you've achieved all your things and now you're just in maintenance. And then the boys on the Canine Paradigm did an interesting episode two episodes ago. The last one that they did was certainly interesting as well. Now, by the time you listen to this, it won't be their last one. But one of their episodes, Pat was talking about his son saying, all right, Remy, you better get ready because we're going to get you into PSA trial. We're going to do the two, what do they call it? PSA trial two.
Yeah, level two.
And he's like, you better get ready because we're going to get some training. And then his son's like, what do you mean? I'm confused. Aren't you a dog trainer? Isn't he already trained? Like, what do you mean you don't have a trained dog? And then he was like, whoa, how confronting of a question from such a young mind to be like, this is confusing. And then and they went, so go ahead, listen to that episode if you're keen to like hear the full story. But like, what determines a trained dog? When is a dog trained? When are you training? What are we at? Is there a fully finished trained dog?
I don't think there's a finished dog. There's a trained dog. I think a trained dog is, if we're talking about obedience, the moment you have to say, if you're still having to say, oh, my dog listens to me in the backyard, but if there's a but in there, then he's not trained.
And then if you stop,
you know, training, like when they say like, oh, my dog listens to me X, Y, Z, but when we go to the park, this and that, it's like, okay, well, there's stuff to work on then.
And then you could certainly say, well, then, so then the answer, to help answer that would then say, all right, trained for what? Or in what context? And again, we're messing with word semantics, I get it. But if you, I would say, okay, most people would say, Chili is, wow, what a trained dog. He's so calm, he's so chill, all this stuff that we hear all the time. And I would say yes, but there's certainly lots of things I need to work on. Oh my gosh, there's a lot of things that I'm not happy about that I would like to improve, or I still need to train him to maintain those skills. Otherwise, if I just stop training them, they will fall away because they won't have a reward history. Like their reward history will be jeopardized and they may get reinforced elsewhere. And some of those behaviors may go extinct if you keep calling a recall and never pay it ever again in the dog. So you need to top it up. So I think training, as I've mentioned before, is like, we have to see dog training like a way of life, because you can learn a certain skill, but you'll always have that skill within you, but it may not be the sharpest it was the last training session you did. So you're really good at pool and you play pool all the time and you like go to the local pool spot and play pool all the time and,
yeah,
you know, compete with your friends and stuff, but then you don't do it for 3 years, 4 years, 10 years. You still know things about pool that the average person doesn't. It doesn't mean that you were as good as you were before, which means you probably wouldn't be able to beat the same level of person you did last time. So if you can treat life as if you're going to be tested today, then I think that just makes training, and for you, for the listeners here, just to like not get, I guess my point is like, don't get complacent. Don't be like, yeah, we do the stuff and he does it. And, you know, sometimes
do the thing.
You know, we do things with my dogs. You know, I think that, again, not bad things. And you listen to the podcast about dog training, so you're probably thinking the way that we're thinking here. But it's important to kind of have that reminder from the boss to be like, hey, you always got to be sharpening your axe. Like, what was it? Abraham Lincoln something.
Was it? I think it was actually Benjamin Franklin. It's like, Benjamin if you Franklin. Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
One of those old dudes.
I'm pretty sure it was Franklin.
So with that in mind, if you want to reassess your training now that, you know, it's been a couple of months now into the new year, it still feels like the new year, but it's not, because like,
I mean, the year's almost 25% over, so it's definitely not a new year anymore.
Oh my gosh, that's scary. So you may want to revise some of those goals that you initially did 3 months ago with your training, and it will take you about 3.5 minutes. Get that piece of paper and be like, yeah, actually, talking about those three top commands. Yeah, his recall is good.
Yep.
However, within these sort of situations, we can improve it. How are you pressure testing it? And this is another thing as well, is we say, okay, so yesterday, little tiny cavoodle, so cute, little Rambo. And
Rambo.
Yeah, Rambo, sure. And Bill, owner, has been training really hard, actually. Like, and I have to say, like, you know, a lot of respect for Bill. Bill's like really intense. And like, you know, he's a typical Greek, like full on, whoa, bang, loud. And I thought, oh, here we go. Like, we're going to do some puppy training. And like, and again, like judging, but without judging, and be like, you know, we'll go through some motions and a poly, you know, we won't get to any like impressive spots, I don't think. I think sure. We'll just do like just the regular stuff. But Bill's all over it and showing up, and we've done extra training now that he's like around 7, 8 months old. His recall's awesome. He was down like a little champion, walking on a loose leash. He had a few issues with like, you know, just barking, getting excited when he saw people and dogs. We've addressed that.
Yeah.
So now it's like, he's so funny. He's like, ah, the little prick ran outside and saw a dog across the road, and he fucking ran across the road and gave me a heart attack. And I'm like, cool. So you could
treat How old's that, the dog?
Like 7 months old, 8 months
oh.
old.
Oh, was it off leash?
Like there's no front gate in the house. Oh, so I see. Doors open and you ran.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he saw the dog. So I said to him, all right, so trial day was that day. That was trial day where you're like, stop, down, or calm, or something. You wanted to work in that moment. Him having the leash off in that front yard, whether he got out the front door or not, is the thing that needs to be worked on. We don't need a good recall. We need to teach a dog not to run out the door. And then we need to teach him when you're outside, because I wouldn't mind if the dog was off the leash in his front yard and he went to his neighbor's house and the dogs said hello and they exchanged whatever mm-hmm. they had to do and, mm-hmm. you know, like what neighbors do. And then you come back, like, I want that dog to be like, walk over, pee, but you're not allowed to touch the road. So the training isn't about yelling at him, telling him off when he does it after the fact. It's all too late. What we did was put the dog on the long lead, open the front door, walk outside, not allowed to run out the door until we tell him, okay, we're going to drill that. The next thing we did was went to the road. We had to teach you, well, there's a sit every time we get to the road. Contextually, every time we get to the road, you sit.
Yeah.
We step onto the road. You step on the road. We say, off the road, pressure, a little bit of a correction, and then step on the road, come back, keep going, okay, and walk. So that's the training. And that's the thing that, like, and now we're advancing two things. We're advancing his sit stay, and also we're giving him context of the road is lava unless we say it's okay. Once we teach him that boundary, then what's going to happen is every time he leaves the house, every time he opens that door, you're working on your thing that you need to work on. If you can't work on it, put the dog away, put him in his crate, put him in the yard or something. It's those little moments of rectifying a few things and changing how you see the situation. And knowing that every time he runs out the door, that's a moment where he needs to perform, puts on a little bit more, like it just makes the training more, not worthwhile, but like important, necessary, rather than, I know I should train my dog and I know it should be a thing that we do. But if you treat it as something a bit more, what's the word? Something a little bit more purposeful. Like we leave the house and we're working towards that thing because, and now sometimes you need the bad thing to happen, like dog run across the road, dog bites the other dog, and the car nearly hit your dog on the way across the road.
Scare you a little bit,
give you enough motivation to be like, let's avoid that for next time. That was bad. That sucked. Right. So like a little bit of like natural punishment compared to Panos told me to do this thing and I did it, you know, and sometimes when you're told to do it, and you're like, yeah. Like, so I've been having some hippies.
Yeah, it usually has to come from more internally than that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Or if you've messed up other things and then now you have some other professional saying you should do that, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to listen to that. I can understand where that comes from because I've not listened to professionals in other things and those things have come true. So you must know something. Like, have I talked to you about my hips being like a bit dodgy lately?
To me? No.
Yeah, I haven't mentioned it here. Yeah. So my lower back, like since December, like bad. Yeah. I mean, like some days bending over was like a mission, or like there was a little tightness. And then eventually got to a point where like I couldn't
bend
over.
Is it your hammies?
It was my hip flexor, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was radiating into my lower back. And then it got to a point where like, I don't know, I did something. What'd I do? I did something acute, really screwed it up. And then like sneezing, like a sneeze I'd yell after like, ah, like scream because my sneeze would, like blow my back out.
Oh, geez.
And so like it was dodgy. So saw my physio. We love Roop. And he like, and he found where it was at, did the test, and he's like, yeah, man, it's your hip. And okay, so my point here is I'm 34 years old. I'm not an old man. But like, how many people talk about you need to like, you know, work your hip rotations, you know, you need your, you know, flexibility, this, that. And you hear this stuff and you're like, yeah, yeah, like I got it, man. I'm strong.
It's human nature, isn't it? We're very reactive as a species.
And then now I'm like, man, I'm going to get so good at like, my hips are going to be so awesome.
Best hips.
They're going to be the best hips. Because, yeah. And like, you know, it's going to take some months to get me back on track and implant it within my routine and my training schedule and my warm-ups and like how do I start the day, and because now it's a problem and now I've got to fix it. It would be ideal that I'd be listening to the physiotherapist podcast and then did all the things to be proactive, but the truth is we're as you said before, we're reactive creatures. Bad yeah. things happen, we try to fix them.
Yeah.
So today's the warning to be like, when you leave the house, how much are you prepared for your dog to perform a certain skill? Like, how much do you need him to do it? And will he do it when you need him to? And how are you going to set up your scenarios to aim towards that? So my hips were done. So now I haven't been able to properly work out my legs, which then means I'm going to now, if I do that for too long, then I'm going to get to a point where I'm like, ah, screw leg workouts. They suck. And then I'll only just do other ones. And then I'll hurt my shoulder from doing that. And then it's just this like constant cycle of just, you know, just fixing, putting fires out and fixing problems yeah. rather than being holistic with everything that you do, which is complicated. There's a lot of things happening in life. Yeah, it's not just about the physical journey or like physical exercise. It's not just the dog training, not just about, you know, family and parenthood and, you know, have you called your best friend lately and said hello and, you know, you're learning new things. Are you sleeping well? Like there's so many things we have to tend to. It's like, it's hard to.
The list is long.
And sometimes we don't put our dogs on the top of that list. I get it. Excuse me. So, if though it becomes part of your mindset, part of your lifestyle, I think it just becomes one of those things that you just do. Like I stretch basically every day just because I think I've found the value of if I don't stretch, then I'm sore and tense and then I injure myself.
Yeah.
And my job relies on me being on my feet. I've got to walk around. I can't hurt myself.
Yeah.
Otherwise I don't make a wage and then I don't can't feed my family and that sucks. So I've got to be strong. So every time we leave the house is trial day for the body. I guess, you know what I mean? So then when you're training
you
sessions-
You put big kilometers on your body as well. Like, what do you do, 30,000 steps a day?
Yeah, like it depends on a day. I would say like 30,000 would be like the most. But that doesn't include like exercise or like extracurricular stuff.
Yeah.
But, and then like, look, like 15,000 is my minimum.
Yeah, that's a good number.
It's a good number.
Yeah.
And they say 10 is like the minimum. Like
yeah, there's minimum. No way most people are doing 10.
Yeah, and people are like, I dropped my 10,000 steps. And it's like, that. Remember, that's your bare minimum.
That's really mean, that doesn't mean 10,000. What that really means is 70,000 a week. So if you did 10,000 today, but did you do 70,000 a week, you know?
True. So there's a lot of things like that point there. It's like there's a lot of things to manage in life and sometimes it gets a bit overwhelming. But if you... You know, that whole discipline equals freedom. If you put the work in now, tomorrow things are a little bit better.
Yeah.
You have a bit more confidence. So client yesterday in group class, I won't name names just because it may be embarrassing, but as a dog walked past her dog and it was a little, because we had all the dogs in a down and they'll space about 1.5 to 2 meters apart from each other. So the dogs in the down have to hold their down and be focused on their handler and not break the position while the dog weaves in between each other. The dogs walking back and forth in between all the other dogs. And mind you, most of these dogs are at class because they are reactive.
Yeah.
Or were reactive.
You're working on it.
And then as she was there with the dog and then the dog walked past and the little dog kind of like looked, she went, ah! Like she's, hey, and like, and she fully anticipated a thing that never happened. And then the dog like kind of got panicky and looked at her like, is there a problem here? And I'm like, don't act like that. I'm like, you know, and then I told her what to do rather than not what to do. And she's like, sorry, my bad. It's just a reaction. I just anticipated something. I'm like, totally get it. And then I said, what we're doing here in group class isn't so that we can be doing good at this in group class. We're doing this so that you can implant this somewhere in the real life.
Yeah.
Because most of you are probably not doing downstays close to dogs walking past because you're nervous. So you do a downstay 35 meters from the dog.
Yeah. So the dog actually doesn't really, he'd never seen that picture.
Yeah, or if he had seen it, it was tied in with something difficult or panicky. So, Now, some people are like, look, there's no way I'm going to be that close to people and dogs. I'm never going to put my dog in that position. And I've got two leads on my dog, two different collars. He's not getting off the leash. There is no trial day. I manage the crap out of him and I live on a property. We never really leave the house. And I'm like, cool, man. Like that's on you. That's not everyday people. Most people are leaving the house. They're putting their dogs in compromised situations and they're expecting them to behave themselves. So you have to have the skills and the patience to be able to, and I mentioned patience, one of the episodes that will be released just before this one, so go listen to it, is that patience and discipline are something that have to be practiced in the moment, not something that you just have, which then means if you're going to have the discipline, which is also a verb, you're going to have the discipline to work towards those things. That just gives you enough things to work on for the next 6 months. This doesn't overwhelm you. This should not overwhelm you. This should liberate you to be like, cool, I have something to aim my training at. And I think with that in mind, get back to your drawing board. We talk about goals all the time and objectives. What is it that you're trying to achieve, you know, and break those things down so that in the moment where you need your dog to come back, you need your dog to go into a random crate,
yeah,
because he's at the vet. You're gone down the coast. He's hurt his leg. You go to a random vet and he's like, we're closing up. We'll get him on the drip because, you know, he got stung by a thing. He needs to be in a crate. And it's like, cool. Well, today was a test and we passed the test because he's now in a crate in random care of someone else. So maybe part of that top five is like adequate socialization so that he could deal while being distressed to be dealing with random people and not love it, but at least tolerate it. And if you don't put the
if you haven't done the work pre that, then you're not gonna have that skill available to you when you really exactly. need it.
And also like another thing that I'll mention, Pat and Glenn, they were talking in one of their podcasts on the Canine Paradigm. They were saying how, I think Pat was saying, on trial day, people say that, yeah, the dog becomes trial aware. So they know that trial day isn't training day. So then they do weird stuff. Like their behaviors aren't the same. Now, is that because the dog's naked? It's like there's no tools or gear on the dog, because on trial day there has to be no collars, no training devices, no food, nothing to help the dog. The dog needs to demonstrate all of their behaviors. So is it because a dog becomes aware? Now, if you have gear on the dog all the time and one day you take it all off and then ask the dog to do it in front of, and again, remember, training days mean 10 dogs and maybe 10 or 15 people. Trial day may be 100 people and a bunch of different stuff happening. So, and different day, maybe a different location. So have we generalized the behaviors enough so that they can do it on trial day? So there's all those different variables of what and factors of what contribute to the dog performing or not performing. But also something to be mindful of is, and what Pat said, which I thought was really cool, he says, the dog, when you say heal in the moment of the trial day, your dog may have like a quotation bubble on top of his head going, your heel doesn't smell the same today. And it's like, interesting. See, dogs really rely on their scent and their olfactory system to be able to determine what's happening in the world. And you're stressed out, anxious, freaking out. People are watching you.
You can smell your cortisol, your adrenaline.
And it's like, that's a different thing, a different stimulus to what you gave me yesterday, which then means, so now let's bring that back to real life. And now, again, if you're practicing a recall, I don't know if your dog can smell how stressed you are from far away when you're calling them to come, but you probably don't have the same recall. So I don't know. And again, my apologies. I've said this too much in today's podcast. Let's just assume the rest of the things that we say today, we've said before. So when I was walking down the street with Chili, all my dogs are off the leash. Grand Parade, busy road. On the other side of the park, on the other side of the road is where we throw the ball and do training. My command, go, means liberty. Go do what you got to do. Away from me, go have fun. And I had Nookie with me. She was like five houses back behind me. And I've gone, Nookie. Now, usually it's like, hurry up, girl. Come on. And I may swear it a couple of times. And she'll come to me, just not fast. And not slow.
Shadow does like, that sometimes.
She's just like, you sound mad at me.
Begrudging, yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, I'll come. I'll take my time. And I'm like, and then this in particular situation, I'm like, let's be nicer to Nookie. And I'm like, Nookie. So Chili's in front of me, about 7 meters away from Grand Parade. Typically, he would just wait for me. Like every day he waits for me. But I've looked back, so I'm not looking at him. I go, Nookie, go, 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 go. And then she's like, yeah, and it's like running up to me. She knows what that means. Then I've turned around and Chili's now proceeded to go to the park. He heard my release and my go to Liberty. He can see the park. He's like, huh, good deal. So he like went onto the road. He was like proceeding to cross the road. And it's like a 2-lane, super busy road. And there's no cars here at this time. Obviously, I still have the dog. So he's there. I see the cars coming. Now, they were probably like 150 meters away. So it wasn't like it was imminent right there. It's all happening. But still dangerous. Now, in that moment when I saw him on the road and I've gone, Chili. And I almost went, get the fuck over here. All right. Now, if I did that, two things would happen. He would be like, you look and sound really angry and I don't like that shit. And more importantly to today's topic is, what is that word? Like, what is get over here now?
That's
like,
what is that anything?
Man, I've never trained that to
him. That's not my recall.
Exactly. So in the moment where I got a little bit emotional and scared, now I would only got angry, not because I was angry with him, but because I was scared. And because I freak out, I may tend to just overreact where I don't cry.
He scared you, yeah.
Yeah, so I got fucking freaked out. So as he was there, I've gone, hello. Literally, that's how I say it. Obviously, loud. I won't scream that into the microphone, but I say it the exact same way that I give it, hello. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he ran up to me, planted his ass on the ground. I grab his collar, I put the leash on him, and I'm like, good boy. And then I will remember that day forever and not repeat that mistake again.
Yeah.
So again, I even knew the rules, but I didn't know under that circumstance that that would happen. That was an unforeseen situation, but every day's trial day. He's off the leash. Now, if he's off the leash, God damn, it should be trial day. Hence why Spades is no longer off the leash. The dog can't hear anymore. Like, I'm like, Spades, Spades. And I'm yelling at him like a psycho because he's just walking in a direction I don't want him to walk. Everyone's like, what's wrong with this big black dog? Why do you have to scream at him like that? Like, is he dangerous? Is something wrong? And it's like, and then I'm not in any position to explain that he's 13 years old, he's hard of hearing. It's kind of sad he doesn't bark when I get home anymore because he just doesn't know I'm home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the car, like before I used to like at nighttime, like close the door a little bit softer so it doesn't bark in the house and wake everyone up.
Yeah.
I can slam the door as hard as I want because Chili doesn't bark and Nookie doesn't bark. Or if I bang the gate closed, he can't even hear that.
So
it's not like
he's
like totally deaf, but you know.
It's going.
Yeah, it's going. Like, and that's happened in the last 2 months. Like, that was significant. So, and another like sad moment. It's like, is he going to live till next summer? I'm not sure. So anyway, we have to appreciate our dogs and maybe we'll.
How old is he now?
13.
Yeah.
14 in October.
Yeah.
Getting on for big boy. So, yeah, big boy. You know, he's on his appetite's like, you know, slowed down. His back legs are horrible. Like, you know, like they're starting to wear down. So, but like, he's still good. He's still happy. Still gets out every day and does their stuff. But our walks are like for him anyway, like a lot.
Pretty slow. Yeah.
But, and we're going to do an episode talking about like how to manage that. I think we did one about senior dogs, but I think this one will be a little bit more closer to home since, you know, a lot of people love and know Spades. And
he's a good boy. And
it's crazy. Like when he goes, that's going to be like a chapter done.
End of an era, yeah.
End of an era. And like, and I think that will really kind of, because, you know, he's always been around since I was like so young and fresh. Yeah. So crazy, crazy times. So
makes us, you know, I mean, that's the nature of dogs, isn't it? They're only here for 10 to 15 years. Not that long when you really think about it. You get a puppy, you're like, wow, we have, you know, I have so much time with this dog. It's like, well,
yeah,
not that long.
Not that really. Long. Depends on how old you, like, you know, how, like, the older you get, the quicker time is perceived to have gone faster and stuff. So, where if you're young, if you're five, one day in your 5-year schedule is, the timeline is a lot bigger of a chunk than when you're 35 and you look back and that one day is like a blip, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I spend more time like with Spades and more just, like he gets massage and rub every walk when I'm throwing the ball for Nookie and Chili. He gets his massage, so he knows. And I just spend more time with him inside the house because sometimes you get to a point where you got three dogs with a lot of things going on. Sometimes you're like, hey, dogs, what's going on? You like do all the stuff with them, but it's not wholesome. Sometimes you just do stuff just to get the chores done rather than like appreciating the person, the dog in front of you, like fully and totally, you know, and not like halfway through patting him 35 seconds, oh, that email. And you're like, no, like, oh, that doesn't matter right now. You're here, you know? So it's another side to the training.
or being present. Yeah.
Being present with the dog and all that. But yeah, that trial day example of Chili running off on the road, I call him to come. Not only does this go for the dog, but my point, the whole point of this is, how do you manage yourself under those pressurous situations? You know, and you like, how many people freak out and they just say sit to a dog? Like the dog's about to react and they go sit. Like as if sit's going to save the dog from lunging at another dog. Like, and if that was the case, then that would be awesome. But it doesn't work that way. So are you practicing the right things, and do you have enough of a muscle memory to be able to execute it? Now, remember, we did mention open closed loops, and we mentioned that podcast we did with the boys and talking about like when people shoot, it's not a closed loop. I'm probably butchering the words now. It's not a closed loop in terms of it's a muscle memory. You shouldn't, like when it comes to like professional shooting and like a real shooter, shouldn't be like target's over there, just gun up and then shoot. It has to be like gun up, aim, fire, take your 1, 2, 3 words that you say and shoot. That could be very quickly if you've practiced it enough. And now, anyway, I've got that bug assault, still obsessed.
Oh yeah, how is that?
It's good. Now, when I shoot as if it's like, there's a fly, bang, I always miss. It's pull it up, hold it, boom. Like, so my cue like is like-
a bit of a cue, behavioral cue for it.
Has to be a cue to get you into like, now I'm going to pull the trigger and that fly is done. it kills spiders really good too.
Really?
Yeah, like just annihilates them. Because they're not as like, depending on the spider, but they're not as robust as a fly, like
interesting
density. So like they're all like longer. So the salt just like tears them apart. Poor
so spiders. I guess in a way it's basically like buckshot, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it's like a shotgun.
It's like turning salt into buckshot.
And the mix is you want 50-50 to table salt and iodized salt, because iodized salt's a little bit.
Did they tell you that, or did you like research it?
Nah, I think I saw a video of it somewhere on Instagram. But like the iodized salt's a little bit chunkier, and then the table salt's a little bit smaller.
That's more damage.
Yeah, so if you just do the table salt, you just got salt everywhere, and you may not actually kill the bug.
Or flies.
If it's all just iodized salt, then it's like all chunky, so you just like launching like big, like we'll say rocks to it.
Yeah.
But a bit of both, you'll get the big ones to kill it, but then the little ones to like disable it. Anyway, but my point there is, let's just say in the moment, I don't know, it's a fly and it's a plastic gun, but it's treated, and again, I'm not planning on shooting anyone soon, but it's treated as if-
Good to know.
Yeah, I'm shooting something, and you never know when I need to shoot something to eat it or to protect somebody. I don't know. Now, call me psycho, paranoid. I don't care what you call me. If you're going to do something, do it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to do something, do it properly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want the fly in my house. I don't want the mosquito in my house. Oh, man, when the mosquitoes are out, I'm like, you're done. In my house, like, you're bug assaulting for sure. 4 in the morning, done.
Yeah.
So, but if you're going to do something, may as well just practice it properly. Now, again, I haven't gone to shooting class. I'm sorry. So maybe I'm not doing it as properly.
Bug assault class.
But I'm not just going bang, 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 and just running around just shooting things like a...
There's a business idea. Coaching people on how to use their bug assault.
Let's do it once a month. Bug assault training.
Yeah.
I did it close to my foot. It really does sting. Like it opens you up a little too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. Like,
yeah. It's good stuff.
They probably don't recommend that.
No, they probably don't. So yeah, whatever you're going to do, do it properly. Make sure that you're a composed person in the moment when you need to give your commands, when you need to develop, when you need to execute a skill under the heat of the moment. That's the whole point of this, is the conclusion of today's podcast, is there's going to be a moment where you need it. How much have you practiced it to get there? You can't complain and be like, we're going to work on that, because sometimes it's too late, because your dog may die, your dog may run away, you know, something may happen, you injure, your dog gets injured and now he's not the same version of himself. Or maybe a situation goes square and then you're not able to get the same behavior or same feeling from your dog in that current or similar sort of environment. Mm. So if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Work towards it and make sure that every time you leave the house that your dog will perform for you. And if you're not, then make sure that all your gear is squared away. You got the right gear to work on. Maybe one of the episodes as well, an idea is like top 5 things that all dog owners should have.
Pieces of kit.
Kit. And we've done that as well. Like we did like quite a thorough one. So go back and listen to that. But things have changed and evolved. And every year we get better at what we do. Every year things change that little bit. So we are now getting to the point of our podcast where we're going to have to revise or go over other topics with a new flair, a new perspective to it. For new listeners, I appreciate, like my client there, she's like 200 episodes plus, I need to get onto this, I want to catch up. But the truth is, people probably don't have that much time to listen to that much.
You don't have to listen to all 200.
Listen to everyone and share them with your friends. No. So, but yeah, we're going to go through other ones because again, like, it's not like we run out of topics to talk about, but everything crosses over and everything's relevant. So I hope you, everybody enjoyed today's episode. Feel free to give us any feedback, any podcast episode ideas, because we love that, because sometimes we can, we may just make another episode topic and it could be similar to what we did before. I think everything's been quite good with our topic selection, but we do like fresh eyes and fresh minds. I have reached out to a couple of guests, still waiting for them to get back. So we will, hopefully get a guest on next time. And yeah, follow us on Instagram, Life with Your Dog Podcast, Kazuna Training and NP Dog Training. Check us out on Instagram. Give us some love. Give us a review if you can, because that always helps the algorithm.
Yeah, bang a rating out for us on Spotify. If you've listened to a handful of episodes and you like what you hear, just click on the review button on Spotify or what do they call it these days? Apple Podcasts, Apple iTunes, Podcast. Whatever it's called.
That's it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, brother. Until next time, have a good one.
Until the next one. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Life with Your Dog. Please share with your friends if you're enjoying our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others find the show. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook, Life with Your Dog Podcast. My name's Panos, and to keep up with my dog training adventures, tips and techniques, you can find me on Instagram at np_dog_training, my website npdogtraining.com, or my YouTube channel Nooches Pooches.
Thanks for listening, guys. My name's Luke. If you'd like to find out more about my dog training services, you can find me at www.kizuna, that's K-I-Z-U-N-A, canine.com.au. I'm also on Instagram at kizuna canine training. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.